Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know. From masterpieces to deep-fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 689, Massive Unbearable Talent Stuff.
Yeah, I think that's
Does
right.
anybody even realize what this movie is, title is a parody of?
No. Well, one, it sounds familiar. Every time I hear it, I know there's something.
There was like some artsy-fartsy book that was turned into an artsy-fartsy movie like 35 years ago called The Unbearable Lightness of Being.
Oh, I thought it was something about being earnest.
Well, there's The Importance of Being Earnest.
Okay.
By Oscar Wilde.
Maybe that's what it reminds
me
of.
Yeah, but there's a book called The Unbearable Lightness of Being, and that, I'm assuming that's what they're trying to make fun of, or riff on.
I like the title, though. I in their marketing, did you see they shortened it?
They just started calling it Massive Talent.
Which I get, but like I love the title so much. Like, I think that's an interesting title, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
It
I think
is.
It's a great title.
It is a great title.
And then every trailer was like, coming to theaters, Massive Talent.
Yeah.
Nick Cajun, Massive Talent.
So it was like a last-minute adjustment. Yeah.
It was a week before the movie started playing, all the internet trailers and like pre-rolls had just Massive Talent.
Right.
And I thought, man, I get it because like that's a mouthful and to talk to people about it, okay. But then I'm like, I really like the real title.
Yeah. So. Yeah, the book was from 68 and the movie was from 88. And I guess I remember because I would have been 18 when the movie came out, but I remember because it was such a weird title, and so it always stuck in my head, but
Being? Like a...
Like being. Like
being.
Yeah.
Okay. Like I couldn't tell if it was a bean. No, it's okay. I was like, is Mr. Bean in this?
Right. Yeah, the film portrays Czechoslovakic. He's from Czechoslovakia.
Oh, right.
Artistic and intellectual life during the Prague Spring and the effect on the main characters of the communist repression that resulted from the Warsaw Pact invasion of Czechoslovakia.
Oh, so a lighthearted romantic comedy.
Yeah, so it's it's everything America wants in a movie.
Apparently.
Yeah. So, but it starred Daniel Day-Lewis and Juliette Binoche.
Oh, it's a Daniel Day-Lewis movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, one of its first, presumably, in 88.
Yeah, wow.
It's really early in.
Okay.
So, according to this, it made $17 million on a $10 million budget, which, for a movie about existential ennui in Czechoslovakia, like, that seems pretty solid.
Yeah, in the 80s, too, like, adjusted for inflation.
I mean, there weren't as many art house movies back then, so, like, if you had a breakout art house hit.
Yeah.
And I think art house movies overall did better because there were fewer, so you were just like, well, I'm fancy. I've got black rim glasses and tweed elbow patches. I'm going to go see an art house movie.
Excuse me, sir. Hold on. Let me remove my pipe.
Yes.
One ticket for the fancy movie.
Yes, precisely. you had to order your movie tickets with a French accent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, well, we know that noise. I mean, I won't say it because I don't want to offend anyone, but we do know the spelling and the history behind it.
Behind.
Oh, boy.
Did somebody get mad about that?
I don't know. I don't think
people get mad about such weird.
I just wanted
stuff.
To remind them in case they wanted to.
Yeah. It's weird the stuff people get mad about.
You're telling me.
Yeah. What did they get mad at Crystal about on the clip out a couple weeks ago? But they got mad because they thought she was being too mean to Peloton because she was reporting on like the stock prices in the toilet. Meanwhile, on the same episode, I told a story about showing my dick to a TSA agent and nobody said a word. And I'm just like, I really thought that's what would draw the heat.
No.
But no.
You know, I mean, that's the thing I appreciate about the clip out, though, is that even though you guys are doing a show about Peloton, and obviously Crystal loves Peloton and everything about it, I mean, there's no question her allegiance and her love for Peloton, but you're also reporting the news and you're not a biased podcast, right? Like if something's weird or the prices go up, like you're questioning that. You're not just blind faith like well, of course price is up, everything good, you
right,
know, support
yeah.
the company. It's like you're questioning, you're like, I don't know, how do you guys feel about this?
And yeah,
I like that you're reporting it. I mean, you are not owned by Peloton.
No.
So you don't have to,
we're not beholden to them.
Yeah. And so
we're journalists who only cover one topic.
Exactly. So if the price is down and you report it, I mean, that's, you're just reporting the news.
Yeah.
And it's not like any of you guys want it to be down.
No.
You obviously want
Peloton
to be successful.
No, we own stock. I assure you, we do not want it to
right,
be down.
Right. So I know. So it is weird. That's one thing I find more and more with the internet. I don't know if it's because there's such easy communication.
Yeah, I think it's because anybody can say anything. And so a lot of times it feels like you're getting yelled at no matter what you do. Like you could do the exact opposite and someone's mad about it.
Right.
So
because there's just so many people out there.
Right.
And this is like, the other day I posted something. Oh, it was about the Northmen. I'll tell this story now since we're, go listen to the Northmen episode from last week. But I didn't mention this story. When I went to see the movie in the theater, I posted the picture that I sent you, Tom, before the movie of the Nicole Kidman ad.
Right.
And I thought it was funny because Nicole Kidman was actually in the movie.
Right.
I'm in an AMC theater watching an ad of Nicole Kidman in an AMC theater, and I'm watching a movie with Nicole Kidman.
Right.
So, right? Like, that's so meta. It's kind of like this movie. It's very meta in many layers, but it's just a silly tweet, right? It gets over 2,000 likes. I'm like, well, that's cool. I got out of the movie, and usually my tweets, like I'm going to see a movie, get 10 likes. Cool, whatever. It's just fun, social. Hey, has anyone seen this? I get out of the movie, and it has like 50 likes. And I'm like, well, that is weird for one of these posts of, hey, I'm going to see this movie. And then it kept climbing and climbing, and it had like 200 likes I sent to Tom. I'm like, it's so funny how this works. I wake up, 1,000 likes, and then later that day, 2,000 likes. But anyway, so 2,000 people liked it, and people are commenting, and they thought it was funny and clever and whatever. So it's great. And there's two comments on there. You're part of the problem. This is why movie theaters suck. Turn off your phone and be respectful in a crowded theater of other people. Like totally going off on me about this thing.
I'm like, first off, have you seen the box office for The Northman? I assure you it was not crowded.
But yeah, slow down. Okay, first of all, I'm very respectful of other people. I'm the type of person where if someone has their phone on, playing a game or checking something, you know, on a bright screen in a theater, I tell them to turn it off. I do not like that. Answering calls, obviously, a pet peeve. I've talked about this. Remember, I said I love going to the theater. Other people are the problem with the theater, not the theaters, right?
Yeah.
So,
and it's the trailers.
Right. So first point, I am respectful and love theater etiquette and don't want people on their phones. Second of all, for over a year, an ad with Nicole Kidman has played after 30 minutes of AMC previews.
Right.
They play the same ad, right? So if someone's going to play on their phone during the year-old Nicole Kidman ad, I don't care. So that's one thing. It's a preview, like you said. Second of all, I sit in the back row of the theater, off to the side aisle seat every time I view, right? There was not even a person next to me. There wasn't a person directly in front of me, which that wouldn't really bother them anyway, maybe, you know. But I have my phone on brightness zero, blue light filter, and it's during a preview, and I'm taking a picture of the screen.
Yeah.
Like, come on. So the thing is, 2,000 people liked it, 50 people shared it, 2 bozos had negative comments.
Right.
So the thing is, like, thousands of people saw it was harmless and knew I wasn't doing something disrespectful.
Right.
But still, 2 people have to have a screed about theater etiquette. It's like, dude, come on.
I've gotten to the point where I'm just like, I love when the theater's empty because I can like, oh, I can play on my phone.
Yeah. And if no one's there, fine. I mean, what's the problem? But that's the thing is, like, I'm the last person. Obviously, these people didn't know me. But
right.
But why do you make comments about people if you don't know them or understand their situation?
Yeah.
If you knew me, you knew I would never, with someone next to me, have my bright phone on and be playing games or taking pictures. Like, dude, it's just a quick thing before the movie starts.
And yeah. It's dumb.
It is. But that's just one example of where, totally. Like, you're going to have thousands of people, millions of people, theoretically, I mean, hypothetically, you know, millions, billions of people who, however, whatever your thing or your podcast or images reach, and they're all going to get it. And you've got someone where their brain is just wired to find the negative in everything.
Totally.
And they have to tell you how much better they are than you because they wouldn't do
that. I see how much Crystal gets because she has, you know, 39, 40,000 Instagram followers.
Yeah.
And I just see how much heat she takes sometimes for just the stupidest, like, stuff where you couldn't even guess that it was gonna upset people
because your mind isn't wired that way.
Yeah,
I mean,
or people get mad at us for just reporting on something like when one of the instructors, her wife is in a band and she peed on somebody on stage, and like we're just like, this happened. Well, this has nothing to do with Peloton. I'm
like yeah, it does.
Well, but the instructor, it's her wife or fiance, and like she always does Instagram lives with her. They have like their own basically cooking show that they run on their Instagram channel. So like, no, she's very much entangled her life with this person, like front facing.
But that's also how news works. If the spouse or the brother or someone, it doesn't matter the relation to someone famous that is followed, or especially if you're reporting the news of an industry and their relative, whatever, has some affiliation, does something, it gets reported on. That's news. I mean, people, there are interested parties. And that's the other thing. People are on the internet with billions of other people and they scroll past something and they go, I don't want to hear this. Why would you share this? Well, it's like, okay, keep scrolling.
Right.
We're not making news or products for one person. Yeah.
No one built the internet specifically for you.
I think that's the strangest thing when people have to stop and comment about something that they don't like.
Right.
When they could just keep going, because that's what I do. There's thousands of things. I scroll, and then I go, hey, this interests me. I'm going to leave a comment. I never go, that I hate that. Let me leave a comment.
Totally. It's so weird, but
I don't get it.
Anyway, we should go around the table.
Kevin.
Tom. So we switched days that we recorded this week, and somehow we think we forgot to tell Joe. So,
well, I think we told him and didn't confirm with him.
But we didn't confirm.
And then he forgot that
and
we
then
told
he forgot,
him.
So, like,
and
yeah.
So it was a. So
yeah.
My
so,
bad.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure I was on the show and accidentally forgot to get Joe on the show.
Whoops.
Sorry. I mean, if you guys want to do another one tomorrow, it's fine.
No, I don't.
Okay.
So
you have the day off tomorrow, Joe. When you're listening to this, a week from now.
Yeah, a week after.
You don't have to come last Sunday.
You didn't
Saturday,
have to show up on Sunday. So thanks. So shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, wherever you find podcasts, you can find us. While you're there, be sure and leave us a review if you like us. And also follow us so you never miss an episode. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, maybe share an episode on your social media channels. We greatly appreciate that. And we'll read your name on the show if the privacy algorithms let me see your name. So here are the people who were kind enough to share an episode last week. Lane LeVanway, David Rojas, Heather Sachs, Julianne Jordan, Ralph Tribble, Librarian Cynthia, Gabriel Lugo, Tammy Sherman Powers, Christopher Rex, Tom Dowdy, Chris Valls, Chris Sanders, Chris Magic Man. We had a Chris Triple. Mm. We haven't had one of those in a while. We have a Hulk, Ronnie Castle, Mike and Oscar, In Session Film, G3 Assemble, Geek to Me Radio, Binge Movies, Ryan Terry from the Forza Crowd Podcast, H. Savernake, I hope I'm saying that right, Invasion of the Remake, Minorities Report, Feel and Film, and Matt Naglia. So thank you very much for sharing an episode. We greatly appreciate that. And finally, don't forget we have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content. Like right now, they're pounding through the Texas Chainsaw Massacre series.
It's a funny show, man. I don't know what they're doing over there, but it's Matt F. Bassler, so I mean...
Yeah, no, people seem to really be digging it. So.
Obviously, we want you to support the show. That's why we say it every week. But you don't know what you're missing over here. You've got Joe and Matt going off for 2 hours about, they're usually doing like 2 or 3 movies at a time. So it's not just 2 hours on one movie.
Right.
But they talk about the movies and they go off on these tangents where if you think we have tangents,
yeah.
These two, the imagination runs wild over
yeah.
there.
So anyway, there's all that. Let's dig in, shall we?
Yeah.
So I don't know who's going to synopsisize it because we don't have Joe.
Why don't you try to do it?
Oh, well, I have Wikipedia in front of me. So
perfect.
I'll cheat. So Hollywood actor Nicolas Cage is struggling with his career. He's been passed over for several major film roles and is constantly pestered and tormented by Nicky, who appears to be him as his younger and more successful self.
Do you know where they took that design from?
Of his Nicky? Look?
Of Nicky.
Or the idea of it.
Both.
I mean, it kind of reminded me of True Romance when Elvis is... But
I can see that. Yeah, yeah. I think the method of presenting the characters like that...
And I guess it's also kind of like... Wasn't there a version of that in Adaptation? Things like that happening?
Oh, yeah. That sounds familiar. I've seen it. I haven't seen that for a long time. Yeah. I remember renting that from Blockbuster. And I was in high school and I rented that. And I was just like... Huh, this is kind of weird.
I liked Adaptation. It's Charlie Kaufman.
Yeah, I need to watch it, and I like Charlie Kaufman too, but I remember just renting it, not really understanding what I was getting into.
Totally, yeah.
So it was kind of like, huh. But okay, so that the younger version of Nicolas Cage, they wanted to do from, you know, a time period of his life where he was, you know, high energy, you know, hitting the scene. They show a lot of his movies and clips throughout the film. But so this is a very young Nicolas Cage that is kind of like the devil on his shoulder telling him to do stuff. But so they modeled it after him in Wild at Heart, the David Lynch movie.
Gotcha.
And he did an interview on a British talk show and came out dressed exactly like this. So they took the outfit from, it was his outfit that he appeared on the show. Leather jacket, black shirt with like a Wild at Heart, Flaming Heart logo kind of thing. And the hair and everything looked just like it. So he comes out and he does somersaults and kicks and punches the air. I mean, he is amped up to 11.
Amped up or coked up?
Well, I don't know, so I'll call it amped up. But he is he is raring to go. And it's a funny interview, but he comes out like that. And so his energy with his crazy manic energy, like more so than even his performances, he comes out and does this interview like that. And so if you want to get an insight into what like early 90s Nick Cage was like when he would talk on a talk show, I'll try to share it on the group with this post.
Gotcha.
But it's exactly modeled from that. And I thought they did a really good job of making it look like that.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely tell it was, you know,
a little CG touch up.
Yeah, but
it didn't look uncanny, but, like when you like fully CG a character and there's something off. Like it was him with like.
Yeah, I think because he performed it, they just had to de-age him.
Yeah, they just put the
and the de-aging was a little wonky, but it didn't matter because it was also like it's supposed to be a fantasy character.
It's in his head, yeah.
So it's if they were really trying to show a flashback, I think it would have been more jarring. I think your mind just gives it a little bit more latitude because it's supposed to be a fantasy.
And we know what Nicolas Cage looked like in the late 80s, early 90s. So.
I think it's harder for them to get away with the de-aging on the people that you know.
Absolutely.
Especially the more, like the further back in time you try to take them, you know? I mean, it's not unlike actual plastic surgery. If you're 50 and you try to look 40, you'll do okay. If you're 50 and you try to look 20, you're going to look insane.
Yeah.
So
it's a problem for sure. But so I liked how they pulled it off. I thought it was good that he was performing. Like you said, they didn't get someone else to do it. And I thought that for what it was for the situation, it really looked good the way they touched him up and had him, you know, and even his voice. I don't know if they altered it digitally or something, but you know, older Nick Cage has a certain sound to him, right? And even when he goes high energy, he just sounds older. That's how it works.
Totally.
And the way that they made him
not
sound,
everyone has my ever youthful voice.
Well, right, exactly. And also try Tonal.
Sure. Use promo code the clip out at checkout.
There it is.
Yeah.
So I like how they actually made him sound more energetic and youthful and everything. Yeah. So they did a really good job. And it's just a small part throughout the movie to where when Nick is struggling with making decisions about his career and all this crazy stuff that ends up happening in the movie, like he'll pop in and give him that guidance.
Yeah. He has a strained relationship with his ex-wife and his daughter because they feel like all he ever has really focused on is his career because he takes it so very seriously. Mm-hmm. This isn't really his ex-wife though.
No. Okay. So in real life, this is a fictional ex-wife, and then also he has two sons.
Okay.
So the it's a fictional family. What I like about this movie is that you can tell there are things drawn from Nicolas Cage's real life. Clearly, I mean, not just the clips, but as far as like working so much.
Right.
And then he's doing this commentary basically like on how can people, like, acting is my job. If you don't show up to work, you get in trouble. Like, I'm working. I'm
right.
acting.
Like, when people are like, why are you taking these nothing movies?
Yeah.
And he's just, yeah, like... It you know, there, I do like the mentality that it kind of espouses, which is like, you know, maybe we take all this a little too seriously.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, he's a working actor, and not everything is going to be Con Air or Leaving Las Vegas in terms of the platform
sure.
or reach of it. And he's going to work, and he's going to make his money. And sometimes he's going to make, you know, pig, and sometimes he's going to make. Yeah, I mean, sometimes he's going to make, you know, movies that really aren't radically different than the stuff we were making fun of Bruce Willis for until we found out he had aphasia.
Yeah.
So,
But I think that I do really like how the movie lets him address that, because this is a movie that he was hesitant to take
yeah.
for several years.
And honestly, the irony, if he wasn't in the mode of taking these smaller movies to keep a steady income, he wouldn't have even looked at this movie.
No, if he was making 10 or 15 million for a big blockbuster movie,
yeah.
he wouldn't, I mean, this, because it could potentially harm his brand, right? So
right.
if he was getting those huge paychecks, he wouldn't need it or even look at it. I'm not saying he needs it now, but, you know, it would,
right.
it would just, you're right, he would pass it up. But I like that they're not actually making fun of Nick Cage, right?
Right.
So this movie is not mean-spirited.
No.
It is not trying to poke fun at his career, and it allows him to address some of these things, like taking so many movies and his family work balance and his energy and how much he gives to a picture. And so I like that he's able to address these things, and in a way that, like, it's the love of Nick Cage, not the
yeah.
critique of Nick Cage.
Yeah, because in a lot of ways, like, even when he's been taking these smaller movies for the last, what, 10 years or so, like, everyone always comments about, like, he might be taking a direct-to-video movie or a borderline direct-to-video movie, but he's not phoning it in. Like, one
no.
of the things that people ragged on Bruce Willis for was he was phoning it in.
Right.
And I know that he has aphasia and he has health issues, but, like, that dude was phoning it
but
in
the performance,
long before
yeah.
that. Like, you can maybe pin some of those performances of the last 5 or 6 years on that.
But Cop Out and Red 2, we've seen it. That
yeah.
was before.
He has yeah. been notorious for phoning things
sure.
in for 2 decades.
Right.
So where it was like, I mean, even when Pulp Fiction came out, which is now you're looking at 30 years ago, there was still, when you were going to a Bruce Willis movie, there was like, is this one he cares about?
Yeah.
Like, you would try to cipher or decipher whether or not this is a movie he actually wanted to make or a movie that they just gave him enough money so he said yes.
Yeah. His career is so great. When you go back and look at his early stuff, it's really interesting that he took that turn. I mean, not to make this a Bruce Willis, but I get the comparison. And,
yeah.
and you know, when you look at stuff like Moonlighting
mm-hmm.
and how much energy and charisma he has, and you look at Die Hard, and you look at
yeah.
the early movies and how great they are, and his performance and his energy, there was a point where it's like he didn't want to be there. I mean, you know, you could tell
right.
when that energy changed. And that's the thing that you never got with Nick Cage.
Right.
Because even if it was a VOD movie, that dude showed up and gave the same Nicolas Cage performance, whether
yeah.
it was Gone in 60 Seconds or Leaving Las Vegas.
Commitment-wise,
he's there, yeah, for the
yeah.
project. And I really love that about him. And I think that's why he's having this renaissance period, because
yeah.
people didn't ever stop loving his commitment and his passion.
He's similar to Michael Caine in that regard. I think the only difference is Michael Caine was never really a fully A-list actor. Like,
okay.
I don't feel like Michael Caine, for as well known as he is, and he certainly had starring roles, I don't think anybody ever looked at, like, Michael Caine as, like, he can open a movie.
Sure.
You know?
He's reliable.
If
it's a Michael Caine movie or Michael Caine shows up in a movie, like, I was just thinking the other day of Children of Men, he doesn't have a huge role in that,
no.
but when he's there
he kills it.
Clive Owen's dad or
yeah.
whatever, I'm like, he's great in the role. So
right.
you know that if he's there, he's going to, I haven't seen Jaws 4 or whatever that he did, like the one that he said paid for his summer house.
Yeah.
I don't know
where
what
they
he
were. Yeah. They asked him, have you seen Jaws? Have you seen the movie? And he says, no, but I've seen the house it paid for.
Yeah.
yeah. And that was when he was kind of having a moment, and somebody threw a bunch of money at him and he took it,
yeah.
you know, cause he was probably, if I'm getting the timeline right, he had just come out with Blame It on Rio, which was a really big hit. And so he did have kind of a box office appeal in an open a movie kind of a way.
Yeah.
But it's a similar mentality of like, he's like, I work. I'm going to take the work, and sometimes it'll be great, and sometimes it'll be less than, and sometimes I'll be the star, and sometimes I won't. Although Nicolas Cage doesn't seem to take the no. character size roles. But I wouldn't be surprised if he pivoted to that.
You know, that's the thing. We see characters pop up. Like, I'm trying to think, for example, this is just straight off the top of my head. I'm thinking of Jim Carrey.
Right.
Jim Carrey was a guy who would obviously open a movie. He was, what, wasn't he one of the first actors to get like 20 or 30 million?
He was the first actor to get $20 million.
Yeah, $20 million up front to start a movie. So he is one of the biggest movie stars we've ever had. Obviously, more silly comedies, not Oscar-worthy type stuff, but whatever.
But he's
box
done
office
that too.
Draw, right?
Yeah,
sure. But then he started showing up after he stopped getting those roles, you know, and before doing like reboots of Dumb and Dumber or whatever, you know. But while he was like not really acting that much, he would show up in stuff like Kick-Ass and be a side character, and he killed it in that role. It's silly and goofy or whatever, but well, that's why Nick Cage was in Kick-Ass too. So I just realized the connection there.
Oh, was
Jim Carrey was in the second one, but
yeah,
Nick Cage was Big Daddy in Kick-Ass.
Oh, that's right.
Chloe
it's
Grace.
Been so long since I've seen it.
Yeah, the dad that like dressed. He looks like Batman, basically.
Right.
But anyway, like, you know, he show up and be this minor character. He wasn't playing the titular Kick-Ass. He was playing this whatever bad guy, or, you know, I can't even remember, but you know what I mean? But he gave it 100% in his side roles.
Right.
Look at now Sonic 2. Mm-hmm. The movie's called Sonic, and I know Jim Carrey's all over it, of course, but it's like, yeah, he's the bad guy in a video game movie, but he crushes it. He is so good as Dr. Robotnik, like as good as you would expect a villain in a video game adaptation to be. Like, he puts 100% on the screen, shows up for it. And so I think there is something to that, to where if Nick Cage started taking those little side roles that are, you know, very well written, but
like
they're
high profile side roles, like instead of being the star of a $20 million movie, be a more of a character part in a $100 million movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I really think that could be successful for him. I don't know that now if he needs it or that he would take that, because now he's had this renaissance with, there's movies like Willy's Wonderland, which was so fun. Such a great movie if you haven't seen it. It's like a kind of an adaptation. It's not an official adaptation, but the kids these days, they like to play this game Five Nights at Freddy's.
Nights
are you familiar
Freddy,
with that?
Yeah, my Sydney stepdaughter loves it. Yeah, or she did. I think she's outgrown it, but there was a period where... Yeah.
So it's like a haunted Chuck E. Cheese, basically. And so you get locked in there. You're hired on as the security guard. And I think every game is pretty much a spin on that. And there's all these security cameras. And sometimes you see the animatronics come to life and they'll like go across the screen real quick. And you have to catch where they are and turn the lights on, but you're running out of power. So anyway, they make this movie called Willy's Wonderland. And it's very similar to that concept. And Nicolas Cage shows up and he doesn't talk in the movie. So it's a silent role, but he's really cool. He's got his sunglasses on. He's crushing cans of energy drink sodas, and like, it's just cool. He gets to play this cool man with no name type character, but he's trapped and he's just beating the crap out of animatronics that are trying to kill these kids that are also there, you know. So like, it's a really fun, wacky role. But he got that, and then for the critically acclaimed roles, he had Pig last year, which was excellent, which he says is his favorite performance of his, and I think a lot of people say is his best. I mean, he's excellent in that role.
And Mandy was really good.
Mandy was
so, like,
crazy.
In the middle of all this, he made some smaller films that, like, while they maybe tend a little bit more towards the schlock end of things, it's really good schlock, right? And he elevates it even more.
Because that's the thing, right? You're getting an actor that, I mean, even though he goes big in most of his movies, but he's still... His love of cinema, right? He's grown up in a famous family of filmmakers. Right. You know, remember, he's Nicholas Coppola. Right. I don't know if everybody knows that.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, like, his last name is Coppola. He's Francis Ford Coppola's nephew.
Yep. Yeah. He changed his name because of, he loves comics. So Luke Cage, and there was another, it might have been from a movie. I can't remember now, but he liked these two different things, and the last name was Cage. So he's like, cool, I'll be Nick Cage. And he said he was doing Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and people wouldn't stop, like, making...
Because he's still credited as a Coppola in that movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And when he was making that, people were, like, having jokes about Apocalypse Now and saying movie quotes. And he says, I can't deal with this. I want a career. Like, I don't want to just be... Coppola's nephew.
Right.
And so he changed it from that point on. But anyway, like, he knows film. He has a passion for it. And so even when he's going big in these roles, he's making choices like based on 1930s, you know, foreign films. Like, he's right. He's like actually drawing inspiration from stuff that most people wouldn't even know. But yeah. But there's a reason why he's making these choices.
And I think if he doesn't go the character route at some point, that would probably be the reason why, is because his performances are so big.
Yeah.
They would really
steal.
Overshadow any scene he's in. So it would, yeah. Like, there are certain movies where you can have a smaller part come in and do that, like Kick-Ass.
Sure.
But on most movies, like, that's a little harder to pull off.
So in this movie, he's struggling. It's very much like with real life, with him taking all those small roles. He's struggling with taking maybe too many of these, and then there's roles that he wants, but he's going too big for them, and he's not right for the part. There's this part in the beginning that he really wants to get. He's just going for it. He wants it because he wants to get his career kind of back on track, and he ends up not getting the role. And his agent is Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah.
And so he's in a couple scenes. You don't see him much, but, you know, he's talking to him about this. He's like, yeah, sorry, man. They just decided to go a different direction. But he said, hey, I've got this other thing, a birthday party. And now, of course, a big A-list movie star, at least at one point, one of the biggest stars in the world, he doesn't want to get paid to do a birthday party, but it's $1 million.
Right.
So it's there in the back of his mind. He's having trouble at home with the ex-wife and kid. Basically, the way it's presented is that growing up, he's shown his daughter all these obscure, you know, classic movies and stuff. Like, when they sit down to watch a movie, it's, hey, watch this because you need to see it, not what do you want to watch?
Right.
And so that's been the problem, and you can see it caused trouble with his marriage and maybe part of why it's ended. He's always working. He's always trying to show people what he loves and isn't paying enough attention to others. So he's having trouble with his family, and then he realizes, like, I need something. I need to take this job. So he calls him back and he says, I'll take the $1 million. And where do they end up going?
Mallorca?
I'm not familiar.
It's an island in the Mediterranean. I think it's part of Spain.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. So they end up flying him into there, but he gets to be a part of, this is where the movie I don't want to say off the rails, but I mean, for the character, things just go nuts from here, because he shows up and then we see Tiffany Haddish and Ike Barinholtz are CIA agents. And so it's like, what the hell is going on here? Now, I didn't know the plot of this movie other than he was Nick Cage. So I'm like, this is going to be weird, whatever. But he gets thrown into this whole crazy cartel investigation that's going on.
I feel like they had bigger roles that got cut.
You think so?
I do.
Okay.
Because I feel like they're both fairly big names. I mean, I don't know Ike Barinholtz. I love Ike Barinholtz, but I don't know that he's a big name per se. But he's a very, I think, become pretty recognizable.
Yeah. Well, they've done 3 or 4 things together now, which is really interesting. Tiffany Haddish and Ike Barinholtz.
Yeah, because they were in The Oath, which he wrote and directed.
So good.
Which I love that movie so much. I was singing the praises of that movie because I happened to see a screener of it when it came out, as it came out. And I was like, this movie is amazing and people need to see it. And if you do the voodoo thing, it pops up for $5 all the time, and it's totally worth it.
It was so good. I remember after I watched it, and I think you told me about it, I watched it. I'm like, this is so good. And I tweeted it, Tiffany Haddish, and I think she liked it and retweeted it.
Yeah, I tweeted when it came out, and Ike Barinholtz liked it, you know, because I was like, this movie is not getting the attention it deserves.
Right.
It is so good.
And that's the cool thing about Twitter. Why I really like it is that you can tell your followers that trust your taste, or at least kind of know, you know, if your tastes are similar, and you can tell them about this stuff. And I like it when the celebrities amplify it, because you know, it's just going to allow more people to see the project.
Right.
And so anyway, I loved that movie. And then they were in something else together. I don't know if you remember what was after The Oath, but then they were both on The After Party on Apple TV Plus. So they're both in that. And then now they're both in this. So they must just really enjoy working together. It's funny them to show up.
Because I wouldn't think that they get to fully control who they work with.
No.
Because it's not like this is an Ike Barinholtz or Tiffany Haddish movie.
So it's interesting. Yeah. And I wonder if it's just one of those things where they talk to one of them and they need this other character and they recommend them or something.
Yeah,
and they're good together. You know, they have this good chemistry, not in a romantic way, but the banter of the partners off each other.
Yeah.
But another thing, too, to remember is this movie was filmed during COVID. Like, everybody with masks on the set.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Trying to navigate around that. So I think the movie turned out really well for knowing all the restrictions they were under and in one of the early movies to try to navigate how to make a movie.
Right.
And I wonder if one of the reasons why they're not with Nicolas Cage and Pedro Pascal, I wonder if it's because of COVID restrictions and them needing to be kind of isolated. Because
even the two of them are pretty much on the phone the whole time.
Yeah, I don't think they're filming together. Yeah, they're exactly. So they're always like one, like Tiffany Haddish is on the ground meeting Nick Cage as he lands there. And then Ike Barinholtz is in a truck or whatnot. And then Tiffany Haddish is usually in the field or right. She's like pacing around a hotel room and he's somewhere else. So you're right. So I think some of that is a COVID restrictions thing.
Gotcha. But yeah, so, they want him to investigate Javi, the billionaire who
Pedro Pascal, which right. is a really funny, I do really like when Nicolas Cage shows up and thinks that Javi's the driver basically. And he's like talking with his agent and kind of bad mouthing, like, who is this guy? How do we even know? Is he some crazy guy or whatever? And then, you know, he ends up just saying these things, not super rude, but a little belligerent. Right.
Yeah.
And then Javi's like, I am Javi.
Yeah.
Hi.
Well, yeah. Cause it's like, who's ever willing to pay $1 million just to hang out with Nick Cage? If you're Nick Cage, you're going to be like, this person's a weirdo.
I mean, it's just that, you know, they may be a very kind, very nice, normal person, but the question in your head is like,
what do they really want?
Well,
yeah.
So it is. Oh, that's one of the funny things when he's on the phone with Neil Patrick Harris. He's like, is this guy gonna be trying to do sex stuff or whatever?
Is he gonna want me to have sex with his wife or watch while he has sex with his wife or watch me while I have sex?
Yeah. And I like that he kind of repeats all that, you know, out in the open. And he's like, no, I'm Javi, and he's like, oh, okay. And he does the little bow thing. It's just so funny. This movie has a lot of little quirky body language type things and choices that Nick Cage makes. And I think Pedro Pascal is really funny as the kind of the straight man, you know, like he's a very funny and friendly character too, but playing off the manic energy of Nick Cage, even an energetic person themselves or charismatic person is kind of the straight man to Nicolas Cage because that's a whole different level. But this movie really reminded me of like a Buddy Road movie, you know? I'm like, I want these two to be the new Hope and Crosby. Seriously, I had so much fun when these two started being friends and on these wacky adventures. I'm like, put them in more situations like this. I don't know, how did that play to you being a fan of those type of movies?
I like this movie. I wish it was funnier. I didn't feel like it had a funny premise and funny and like, and there were comedic situations, but I didn't feel like there were as many true jokes as there could have been.
Do you think they tried to play it too straight?
I don't know. Like I just wish that maybe someone had made a pass just punching it up with actual like jokes along the way.
Cause sure.
There were funny moments and, you know, I mean, like I liked Ike Barinholtz's line, which is in the trailer where she's like, you know, trying to define Nicolas Cage and it says he was in The Croods and he's like, no, I haven't seen The Croods.
That was hilarious.
I'm 45 years old.
I like how he kept bringing it up. Like after that, he's like, Croods, why would I have seen The Croods too? Yeah. His delivery, Ike Barinholtz has that same, that crazy energy when he's like just angry and it's so funny.
And so I feel like it needed more actual jokes along the way to augment those comedic situations.
Okay.
And so overall, I liked the movie. I just didn't walk out of it loving it in the way I thought I would based on the premise.
Sure. I think a lot of this was trying to find a balance between really funny moments and kind of, I don't want to say poking fun at, but to look at Nick Cage's roles and how over the top they are and also why we love them.
Right.
But then also have it be serious enough and interesting enough for Nick Cage to take this on. Right. And so I think that they had a really tough time and hats off to them for balancing it and making it as good as it is because, you know, he didn't want to do this movie and they had to prove to him like, no,
this is not mean-spirited.
Exactly. But also, like, there's a really good self-discovery with the character. Like, he starts off the movie as the Nick Cage that we know, or at least we think we know, the public Nick Cage. And then he ends up realizing that there's more to life than just work and that, you know, family and all that he discovers along the way. And friendship, of course, with the Javi character. So I think they did a good job of that. I agree. It wasn't as crazy as I thought it was going to be.
Right.
But it's because of the dramatic through line that carries throughout the film, which I also appreciated because there's a lot of heart with it. And knowing that this is a real guy right? Like, this is Nick Cage playing himself, and it's not a parody. So, you know, I felt it, like him talking about taking roles and him being distant from his family and working all the time and stuff. I'm like, I bet you that's pretty much real. And he's, I always wonder how that is for an actor in a movie where they play themselves when it you know, touches close to home.
It's interesting. I wonder if that was kind of a wink with Neil Patrick Harris, because I mean, there's an actor who jump started his career by playing himself.
Yeah.
You know, or heightened version of himself in Harold and Kumar. Right?
Yeah, that's like true.
That is what led to How I Met Your Mother, which led to just, you know, people finally not seeing him as Doogie Howser, right? Like now, and when he dies, his obituary will not say Doogie Howser in the first sentence. It'll say Barney Stinson.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. I really wonder if there was a choice for getting Neil Patrick Harris to be the agent like that, because it is a very similar type of trajectory as far as like someone playing themselves. And but I really appreciated all that stuff in the writing though about Nick Cage. Like, so I liked the dramatic stuff, but that also meant it took away from the zaniness of them being in the mix undercover as a CIA agent investigating the cartel, because that's what we eventually get into.
Right.
The whole time, you know, Nick Cage just thinks he's there for a birthday party, and we're not so sure about Javi. Javi says that he's his biggest fan, and he shows that he's collecting things, whether it's different signed autographs or movie props. He's got the chainsaw from Mandy.
Right.
He's got a life-size figure or statue of Face Off, and he's holding the golden guns, like exact replicas, if not somehow the actual ones. You know, so he's a hardcore collector, so you know right off the bat, like, okay, this guy really does like Nick Cage. It's not just a front.
Right.
But once the CIA gets involved and they start telling Nick Cage that, no, this guy has this huge drug operation, you start to question, like, well, what's really going on here? But come to find out, spoilers, it's his cousin that runs the operation. I guess that their parents were involved in starting this cartel, and then once the head of the family died, it ended up going to the cousin, and the cousin is giving him money to start his own business, which is it a winery? Is it a vineyard?
Something like that.
Okay, so Javi runs what seems to be a pretty legitimate...
Like, he runs the legitimate end of things, and basically they let people think he's a drug lord because it draws the attention from the actual drug lord, but he isn't actually doing anything illegal or bad.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, this whole question, like the whole second act is Nick Cage trying to get information for the CIA and tiptoe around saying anything that would reveal that he knows or thinks that Javi's a bad guy.
And he's conflicted because the CIA is like, this guy's a drug dealer and runs a cartel and we need to take him down. And he wants to do the right thing if he's a drug dealer. But he's also conflicted because the Javi he's interacting with does not exude any evidence of being anything like that.
Right.
And so he's also conflicted because he genuinely likes the dude. And he seems like a nice guy, but then you have this very reputable source telling him that he's the exact opposite.
Exactly. So there, that conflict I really like. And the thing with Javi, they form this instant friendship because, you know, first they're there on this business proposition, but Nick Cage is in a rut. He's really sad about his career. He's not getting the roles he wants. He's getting rejected. He's got problems with the family. So he shows up kind of as a last resort and decides, I'm going to take this job and I'm going to retire from acting. But Javi is like super fan, and another reason why he wants to get him there is to read the script he has written.
Right.
Javi has written a script and he wants Nick Cage to star in it, and he's like, you can't retire from acting, and you know, the world needs you and all this stuff, but he also wants to work on him with this movie. And so he sees that Nick Cage is not the person he expected. He shows up, he's sitting by the pool, drinking his life away. Like he jumps into the pool, which I think is at a Leaving Las Vegas scene. He recreates a scene where he jumps in a pool.
Oh, is that from Leaving Las Vegas? Because it's also like it's very reminiscent of The Graduate.
Oh, okay, sure. But yeah, I think he does that in Leaving Las Vegas.
I haven't seen the last time I saw Leaving Las Vegas, it was on VHS.
Okay.
So it's been a bit.
There you go. So he you know, he's getting drunk and Javi's trying to talk to him about movies and stuff, and Nick just doesn't care and he walks off into the pool. Javi jumps in and kind of saves him out of there. The next day he wakes up very hungover, and Javi's assistant, love interest slash they can't be together because she'd be a target for the for the cartel. She gets him out of bed and she's like, you know, this guy paid $1 million for you to be here. If Javi wants to take you to see the hills or whatever he wants to do, you are going to be excited about it, which is another really funny moment because it flash cuts to them in the car and Javi goes, oh, she told me you're really excited to go see the hill. like clearly he's disinterested, but the way it's written is very funny. And he's like, oh yeah, I can't wait. But he's just down until Javi takes him to this cliff and he breaks into this like performance. I don't know if it's out of his script, but Javi knows that he needs to get the Nick Cage that he knows and loves out, and he pretends during this scene being chased from a movie, which I'm sure he's drawing a little bit from the cartel stuff around him,
right.
But he just makes up this thing like, they're gonna get us, we're gonna die if we don't escape. And so they end up jumping off of a cliff and they fall down a pretty long way.
Yeah,
and they come up for the water like, I didn't know it was that deep. Are you? That was crazy. But from that moment on, they're like two peas in a pod.
Yeah.
Best friends. They're going all around the town. They're going into town having drinks. It's really funny. What do they? They do acid?
Yeah, they do LSD.
They do LSD. Yeah. And so they're going around the town and they're paranoid. They think people are following them. And then at this point, he knows about the CIA, right? So I think Nick Cage is actually like, he knows there might be people following them.
Yeah, because that's when when they're on acid is when he shows him the room with all his Nick Cage memorabilia, because like there's this the subplot which
is the way it opens is the cold open.
This girl who's the president's daughter of this country is abducted and by the cartel, so the CIA thinks that Javi has her,
right?
And so they think she's in this certain room that he won't let anybody in, and it ends up being the room with all his memorabilia.
Yeah.
And he's embarrassed to show it to Nicolas Cage because he's just like, oh, I'm going to be such a fanboy.
And Nick Cage thinks he doesn't want to show it to him because it will reveal. He's
because the girl's in there.
So a lot of this, I mean, this movie did decent. I think it opened to like around $10 million, but obviously a lot of people listening won't have seen it. So you really should watch it. It's worth a watch. And what we're revealing is a lot of the fun of watching it, trying to figure out yourself. Is Javi a bad guy? Is he not? But it's really fun how you know kind of the mindset of both characters and what they're thinking, but they don't know what the truth is with each other. So they keep getting into these situations. But anyway, they see like two old guys eating ice cream and they're paranoid that they're following them. And they're clearly just two old guys.
Right.
But they're like, but maybe they are, you know, so that's where they run away. And I did catch the trailer before a movie. I saw the thing with like them trying to get over a wall.
Right.
And like, I won't leave you. Go without me. And then he pops out the other side like, oh, we could have just walked around. But it's a funny moment.
Yeah.
And they're trying to escape those two old guys who are clearly no threat.
They have no interest in them whatsoever.
But, you know, but they keep referencing things. So like in the movie, he's watching clips from what's the movie? Is the Las Vegas movie? What's the one with is it Con Air with the little girl? Is that the one where that clip is? Joe would know this.
I think that's Con Air.
I think it's Con Air with the little girl, but they show that, and I think they show Leaving Las Vegas. They show clips throughout the whole thing. But then Javi, I think, asks him about Gone in 60 Seconds. Did you do your own stunt driving? And he really did, and so he says yes. And then later on when they're on acid, he's like, you got to drive and get us away from these guys. So Nick Cage is like, I can't drive on acid. He's like, you're going to have to. So he's ridiculously driving away and all this stuff. So they go on all these wacky adventures, and it's ridiculous and big. And I think that's what people expected the whole thing to be.
Right.
Which is why it's not a bad thing to me necessarily, but it's not as crazy as it could have been if the whole thing was just ridiculous like that. But you do get those moments that are really fun. And then you're eventually, we do find out that it's the cousin, right? So they go through all these conflicts and Javi isn't turning out to be a bad guy. And Nick Cage is conflicted because the CIA is telling him this little girl is going to die. And it's because the president is probably like tough on drugs and the cartel, and they don't want him to run for re-election.
Yeah.
So they kidnap the daughter and say, unless you drop out of the re-election or out of the race, you know, we're going to kill her. So the clock is running because the election's coming up. And so the CIA is like, you have to take him out. And they eventually say, you have to kill Javi, because if you don't kill Javi, he's going to just do some bad stuff, right? And so he's faced with like this guy that they've become instant best friends, and he doesn't see, he's trying to tell them like, I don't think it's Javi, there's nothing here that proves this to me. And Tiffany Haddish is like, kill him. So it's crazy they're in this situation. Meanwhile, the cousin tells Javi, he's working for the CIA. And Javi's like, Nicolas Cage working for the CIA? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But he's like, yeah, they know stuff. He's working for them. So you need to kill him. So you get into this ridiculous situation where neither of these guys would ever do anything like this. Javi's not really in the cartel. Nicolas Cage is an actor. But now each of them is tasked with killing one another, which is just nuts. So, but it's kind of funny the way that they walk. It's shot like there's a wide shot and they come from either side of the screen, face each other, and they're like, hey. You know, they did that thing in movies like, hey, where they each know something's up. You know, you go first. And they walk to a car and they drive off together. But each of them, they were late over the shoes, right? That's the thing. Like,
yeah, they each end up wearing the other one's shoes.
And
yeah.
They're like, you want to just switch? And see, that's the thing I love about this movie and why I say I want more of these buddy movies with these two guys, because I enjoyed this stuff so much, even more than the CIA plot. Like, I could have done without that. I know that it drives the story. I understand.
Right.
But
if not for that, there would be virtually no plot.
No conflict. That's the conflict. But what I'm saying is, like, maybe make a different plot, because I enjoyed so much the buddy part of it and why I would love to just see these two guys going off on wacky
adventures.
I
think they were trying to come up with a device that would allow Nicolas Cage to still have a few action scenes to see. Because, I mean, really, at the end, when they figure out they're on the same side and they're in...
Yeah, act three is action.
Yeah. And you get to... It's kind of like Hot Fuzz in that... You know, Hot Fuzz, he spends the first two-thirds of the movie saying how all these things you see in action movies are utterly ridiculous. And then...
And then in
the third act, like, he ends up as a police officer having to do every single one of them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so they don't necessarily set it up in quite the same way, but, like... Nicolas Cage.
But but you're right, it is very self-referential, because when they're talking about Javi's movie script, it's meta in the way that they talk about it, because the movie script and the ideas they're talking about are the movie we're watching.
Yeah.
Like, they don't know it, and it's not look at the camera type of wink, but we as the audience know they're actually describing this movie, because they say, like, oh, two people that, what do they say? They're like, whatever they do, they're describing, and he's like, I hate movies. Nick Cage says, I hate movies that do this, that, or the other, you know, and blah, blah, blah. But he's describing, and then the action stuff, he actually says, like, I don't want to do a whole bunch of just action and guns in this. But then in the third act, they do what he says he didn't want to do. So I think maybe they pulled a little inspiration.
And so he ends up using what he knows from action movies to save the day, because he ends up, you know, when they have this conflict at the end with getting the girl back, and then they end up abducting his daughter, because Javi brings his family.
Which is obviously such a ridiculous plot point. You know, I mean, it works fine in the movie, but
I like how it works, because it causes Nicolas Cage to suspect that Javi is a drug dealer, because he's saying, I'm bringing your family here because you need to mend ties with your family. But, like,
it's like leverage.
But Nicolas Cage sees it as like, or did you bring them here to threaten me as you know.
No, it works fine for that. I just mean, like, in the real world, like, I mean, this guy is a multimillionaire, and he got Nick Cage there for a birthday party type thing. So you can suspend your disbelief. You can say, like, this guy gets stuff done.
Right.
But the fact that he got this guy is out of the country doing this birthday party, and he got his ex-wife and kid to pick up and go there without really knowing why they're there.
Right.
You know, so it's a little far-fetched, but I do like the way it works with the plot.
Yeah.
But when they have this showdown where they each think they're going to kill each other, and they obviously really don't want to, but Javi pulls out a gun, and then Nick Cage pulls out his two golden guns from Face Off, which is so ridiculous. He's like, Javi goes, are those my golden guns? And Nick Cage is like, no, these are my golden guns. And they also, I love that they mention, again, in a very self-referential way, when Javi shows him these guns and the character and everything, he says, like, yeah, and they're really loaded, too. Like, it's ridiculous.
As soon as they say that, I'm like, okay, so these are going to be
used.
Yeah.
But it's so funny, because you're like, yeah, of course they're on display. They're not real guns. They make sure to mention, yeah, these are loaded, real working guns. But anyway, so they realize, like, what's going on, and Nick Cage is like, I know you're not bad or whatever. And Javi's like, yeah, it's my cousin. We got to get out of here. And so then the action starts, and the whole third act is the cartel coming after them. There's chase sequences on motorcycles. They're chasing the Jeep or whatever it is going down the street of the city. I like how Nicolas Cage actually, like, the motorcycle guy pulls up and Nick Cage, like, takes his helmet off and hits him with it or something.
Yeah.
There's some cool action sequences in the movie. And so they're trying to escape from them. They end up their way to get the daughter is that the ex-wife is, I guess, a makeup artist. That's how they met in this fictional world, is on the set of one of his movies. And so she dresses up Nick Cage as like some Russian mobster
like that
type guy.
Yeah.
And so, again, a ridiculous premise, but he's got like the fake nose and long hair and the hairy chest with the tracksuit open, you know, stereotypical like John Wick bad guy,
right?
You know, but he's supposed to be coming in for a meeting with the cousin. And so he shows up and his people, there's like a henchman that isn't so sure of him. Like he knows something's up. But anyway, so they get in there and they go to the daughter and end up getting caught and they have this standoff and everything. But anyway, everyone gets out basically. Nick Cage kind of stays behind to save the day and sacrifices himself. But Javi is like, I can't let this guy die. So Javi busts into where the guys are holding Nicolas Cage at gunpoint, starts shooting people. Nick Cage goes and gets a gun and is shooting people. Like, it's ridiculous. These guys are going through, tearing up everybody. They escape. And then the final...
So as you're seeing him like win the day and he's saving the daughter, as his own daughter, as he saves his daughter, it cuts to like a different woman playing his daughter. And then it pulls back and we see that we're watching the last scene of the movie they ended up making.
Right. So the movie they're trying to make, the movie Javi wrote, was different, but because of this experience and because of them workshopping it and going on this crazy adventure, they actually rewrote it into the movie. So this movie is like based on their true events.
Yeah.
And it's a huge premiere. The people are clapping. I will say the cousin at this point in the movie, within a movie that you said, the cousin chases them all the way to, I guess it's the U.S. embassy in the country that they are. And so everyone's got guns on them and he's got, does he have the ex-wife or the daughter? I can't remember. He's got one of them at gunpoint.
Yeah, because that's the final scene I was talking about, takes place right outside the U.S. embassy, because they're trying to get to the U.S. embassy, because then obviously that's like base in a game tag.
But the thing I wanted to mention is this really badass part, and it's completely unbelievable and ridiculous, but it works because it's a movie within a movie. So I don't think we actually see how it happens unless we're supposed to believe Nick Cage really did this thing. But there's Chekhov's knife in the back. One of the bad motorcycle guys drops a knife in the car, so you know it's going to be used.
Yeah.
I think the daughter of the president hands it to someone, or hands it to the daughter, and then the daughter throws it. The open knife flies through the air, top over bottom. Nick Cage catches it.
Oh, yeah.
And stabs the bad guy and kills him. But then it pulls out and it's a movie. So, like, it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you're supposed to believe it's exactly how it happened, but in the movie, that's how it happened.
Right.
In the movie, that's how it happened. So, anyway, but it's a big premiere. Demi Moore plays the wife.
Right.
The ex-wife. And so everyone's clapping. It's a huge thing. Javi comes in later, and Nick's like, you didn't watch the movie? He's like, no, I was too nervous. But they have a big career, obviously. They're like, Javi's going to be a Hollywood writer now and make movies, and Nick Cage's career is revitalized because this was such a great action movie, and he's back now. He's mended things with his family. It's up in the air whether or not they're going to get back together, but like, they're having a movie night.
But they're having a movie night, and he's watching a movie that she picked, which is Paddington 2, which he had watched earlier because Javi's like, it's the second best movie ever made.
That was funny. Javi says, what are your or Nick Cage says, come on, what's your three favorite movies? And the number one is
Face Off or Con Air.
Yeah. And then Nick Cage says Dr. Caligari,
the cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
And then Pedro Pascal says something else, but then he's like, Paddington 2. And Nick Cage can't believe it. And it's funny because you know the writer's taking this from the real world, because everyone has this conversation. I still haven't seen it. I know it's crazy, but people are telling me Brad loves Paddington, is always telling me. But that's the thing. People tell you how great it is and you go, Paddington or Paddington 2, like what? So this is totally pulled from real life.
Yeah.
And then they're watching it and they're both crying and they're having a great time. And Nick Cage is like, you're absolutely right. This is one of the greatest movies ever made. And so, yeah, that's what the daughter picks for movie night. And Nick Cage is like, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
and it was kind of cute. And the daughter's like, the family's having a good time. The daughter's like, are you hitting on mom? It's a cute ending.
Yeah.
And it kind of, like, even though it's a fictional version of Nick Cage, he gets to kind of mend the things that probably really happened in his real life with his kids and feeling a little more distant. And you know, it gives him kind of that fairy tale ending with his career being back. But in real life, with these movies, like we mentioned, the good little indie or art house hits, like, he is back. And so it's nice the way that it all fits together.
It's a dangerous tactic for an actor to take, you know, but it does kind of, you know, sometimes work in that old, like, how can we miss you if you won't go away?
Yeah.
And I think that he didn't fully go away because he it, when they keep that's a running gag in the movie, like, oh, we're back, baby. And he's like, not that we ever went anywhere.
Now, right. Yeah.
And but so he never stopped working, but he wasn't in he hasn't been in movies that have been as high profile. So for a lot of people, he kind of did go away. Yeah. And it's a good reminder of like, hey, Nick Cage has been in a lot of movies that you really liked. Yeah. Don't forget that. And ironically, that kind of break of taking a bunch of roles for money because he needed the work, you might have ended up serving him pretty well in the long term. Like,
yeah.
It's repositioned him for a comeback nicely. And it's an interesting situation where he's not rusty because while it's a comeback for a lot of people, a lot of the general public, he never stopped doing it.
No.
So he's still good at it. You
and
know?
And the thing is, Nick Cage really never changed, right? It's more that the audience changed.
Yeah.
Like, he was big in doing these ridiculous roles for a long, long time. Like, I mean, at the height of, I mean, when he was doing, yeah, like Leaving Las Vegas, he won an Oscar for,
right?
And so, and Raising Arizona from the 80s, like, I mean, obviously he's been around, he's been in great roles, but then not too long after some of these, when he was doing Gone in 60 Seconds and some of these other really popular movies, like when I was growing up, he was doing ones like Knowing and like the one with the bees, when he
says,
the bees or whatever, like those clips would go around. And so like Nicolas Cage has been doing that big overacting thing for a long time. And I think audiences after a while started to be like, okay, like this is a little much.
Right.
You know, and we love him for Face Off. We love him for Con Air, for all that type of stuff. But I think audiences started wanting different things from their movies. And so Nick Cage was still delivering what people were demanding in the early 90s, but things shift, right? It's just like we see a change in the landscape. Look at movies right now. I mean, we all know that like theaters and big movies are superhero movies and Fast and Furious and action movies, where not that long ago, the popular movies were drama movies that were making $100 million. So audiences change, and Nick Cage went away for a while as like opening a movie, a big movie, because audiences weren't looking for that. But then people like my age that were growing up with Nick Cage became filmmakers, and they said, we love Nick Cage, we grew up with his stuff, we need to write roles that will really work to his style.
Ironic, given that it was his co-star in Face Off, but like that's the John Travolta trajectory, right? Like it's like, you know, he was a huge movie star and then couldn't get work or was making a lot of very substandard films. And then a young filmmaker who grew up with him was like, no, he moneyballed it, right? He's like, oh, I remember, no, there's a really good actor slash movie star inside of John Travolta, and America has forgotten it.
Right.
And I'm going to put him in my movie, and it rejuvenated his career.
Yeah, exactly. So Nicolas Cage also, we didn't mention it, but he did a movie that was like a Lovecraft movie. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's called like a Color Out of Space. Okay, it's really cool. It's this Lovecraft horror movie, and it's really weird. It was right around the time of Mandy. So this guy was just like firing on all cylinders. He kept putting out these really good art house movies. But go see that. It's a really weird, you know, because it's Lovecraft. You know, so there's weird stuff going on, but he's really good in that one. So I mean, Nick Cage is back. It's really nice to have him back, and I think this movie was a really loving tribute where I never felt like it was getting mean.
Right.
You know, it was never poking fun at him, like we said, and he got to explore some of his real life career and family things, and you know, it all ends on a happy ending for them, and I think that's like real life. Like, he's back and he's making movies.
It'll be interesting to see what this does for his career, because it's not necessarily going to be a huge box office hit, but I feel like it could be his Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah.
In the way that Robert Downey Jr. made Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which if you have not seen, you should stop what you're doing and go see, because it's amazing.
Yeah.
But it was not a big hit, but it reintroduced him to Hollywood.
Right.
And it's what led to him getting Iron Man.
Right.
And they were like, oh, he can still do this. Okay, we can trust him with this movie. And I wonder if it will have the same impact for Nicolas Cage in terms of what he does next.
Yeah, I bet it will, because this movie is one of the bigger movies, right? So all those other ones we mentioned, like we know them running in film circles and people talking about them, but the way they advertised this movie and why they changed the title and made sure people would remember it and everything, like this is advertised as a big movie.
Totally.
And so I think this is more of a general audience movie. I'm not trying to be snobby. I'm not saying they can't watch the other ones, but this was advertised like a up there with all the other big, you know, like a Fast and Furious movie, mm-hmm. right? You know, go see Massive Talent. It's
right.
You know, for everyone can go see this and enjoy it and laugh and all that. So I think that you're going to get more people seeing this that haven't seen those other little ones.
Yeah.
And it's going to make them go back and ask, well, what is Pig? What is Mandy? What is Chainsaw, right? What is Willy's Wonderland?
Yeah.
And this is going to open their eyes to all those other things. And I think it's going to help them get more roles.
And I think it will do really well when it hits streaming.
Yeah.
I think, you know, and that window is so narrow now, which I think does benefit these movies because now when it's in streaming, it's only been 6 weeks since it was in theaters. Right. And they're like, oh, yeah, let's try this.
Which is perfect for the landscape today. The thing is, Moon Knight just did the penultimate episode. I know it's kind of switching gears, but there's 6 episodes in Moon Knight. They just posted episode 5. I didn't watch it the day it aired. People were already posting about it because they have to the second it comes out.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, come on, get out of here. Like, I haven't even watched it yet. And then I just watched it yesterday, which is 2 days after it aired, and I realized no one's talking about this anymore.
Yeah.
It was everywhere the second it posted.
Right.
And it got me thinking, like, but that's how things move, right? Like, even if you really love something and it's crazy and you talk about it, even a couple days later, you're on to the next thing.
People don't spend time with the pop culture things they love in the same way anymore.
Right.
Like when I was growing up, Star Wars, I mean, you just immersed yourself in Star Wars for the years in between. Like,
played games and made up stories.
Yeah, and you'd had the toys and you signed up for the newsletter, Bantha Tracks.
Yeah.
Like, you did all that. And Ghostbusters, Back to the Future.
Right.
And now it's like, you see it, you're like, I enjoyed that. What's next?
Exactly.
It's like, we're the beast that can't be fed.
Yeah. So I noticed that going on a lot. And then when you see that now it's 45 days or 6 weeks in theaters, that is plenty of time for anyone that wants to go see it.
Yeah.
I personally think a month is enough time. I'm not saying you have to pull it from theaters, but I mean exclusivity.
Right.
If you want to see something in theaters, a month is a really long time. Okay. So 45 days, fine. Give it a little extra exclusivity. But 2 months later, people today in general are not talking about the thing that came out 2 months ago.
They're not.
Unless it's like, I'm ready to own it.
Right.
You know, get it on video. But if you wait any longer, people are just like,
they forget.
There's 20 other things.
I think their concern, though, from the theater standpoint is that if the window's that short, now it becomes, well, why bother to spend $15 to go buy a movie ticket when I can just buy it when it comes out?
You're right. There's a balance.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we saw, are people ever going to go to, like,
right.
are they in the first place going to go? Right. So you got to balance it.
Yeah.
With,
it's a brave new world and they're still figuring it out for sure.
Yeah. But this was fun.
Overall, I liked it. I just wish it was a little funnier.
Please give me another movie with those two though. I think their chemistry together,
they were
great. I thought was really good.
Yeah.
The buddy stuff was my favorite, and please, it just reminded me of how fun one of those, a good road movie can be with two people with chemistry. So.
Road to Morocco.
Yeah.
It's
exactly.
My favorite of all the road movies.
It's dad joke after dad joke,
but they're so good.
Don't you think?
And they know it. They just, the way they wink at you.
Yeah.
So, and it goes on sale on Vudu a lot. I think last week it was on sale for like $5.
Yeah.
It might still be $5. Road to Morocco.
I think they did
probably on YouTube for free. Like, honestly.
I think they did a sale with all the road movies where they were like $5 recently. I remember, like, I was scrolling.
Yeah, all but one, because I believe it's Road to Bali, which was from like 1952. There's this big gap between the last road movie and they did one, maybe it's even later than that. Maybe it's like 59, but it was like, it's on, for some reason, it's with a different studio.
Oh, okay.
And so it doesn't get bundled in because it was, all the movies were called Road 2. Like,
sure.
If you, as long as you hired Hope and Crosby,
right.
Like,
you could say that.
You could call it Road 2. Like, it's not like James Bond.
Yeah, it wasn't like MCU.
And they never played the same characters.
Yeah.
They, you know, it wasn't the same characters from movie to movie.
Right.
They were always different roles. And so anyone could call a movie Road 2. Like, you really couldn't
stop it. You
can't
own that.
Right.
Well, and that's what I think with this one. I don't necessarily need them in a sequel. I'm like,
right.
Let them be buddies on a trip and
totally.
Let them keep reprising, just like the Hope
movies.
And Crosby.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
Hi, this is Kevin. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. And for the gamers out there, I'm a part of a new podcast called The Games We Love. So make sure to subscribe to that. We're talking about new games, but we're also talking about some retro games and just overall our love for video games. So don't worry about it. Even if you don't play games on the regular, there's still discussion about, like, last week we talked about Super Mario 64, which is like 20 something years old now, right?
Yeah.
So like, it's old. It's getting to be called retro. which is like the stuff I grew up with. So it's a weird feeling. I'm starting
Welcome to getting old.
I know. I'm starting to get into that where it's like, oh my gosh, the stuff I played as a kid is retro. I'm not retro.
Yeah. So, it's going to get better. It's going to get worse before it gets better, and it's not going
to
get better.
Oh boy. Yeah. But listen to that. It's a lot of fun. A friend of our show, Brad Hyen, is one of the regular guests on there. So you can get more of that. We don't have any rules or anything established. We may have to, depending on how he gets.
You know how he can be. You got to watch him. So. And you can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and don't forget our Patreon. And next week, I guess that's a pretty obvious one. We'll be tackling Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. So until
you think so? I mean, Joe's not here. We could probably pick something else.
Okay, we'll see if we can find a good musical. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Lester and Lottie kidnap Maxine.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.